Presenting Hop Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves.
The X-4 calling control tower. The X-4 calling control tower. Standing by.
Control tower, back to CX-4. Wind southeast, sailing 1200. All clear.
Okay, this is Hop Harrigan. Coming in. Yes, it's America's ace of the airwaves. Coming in for another transcribed episode in the adventures of Hop Harrigan.
You know, gang, one of the most important developments to come out of the last war was real cooperation between the soldiers on the ground and the air forces. Planes helped our GIs out of many a tough spot in combat, not only by bombing and strafing the enemy, but also by dropping food and ammunition to units cut off from regular supply lines. During the war, the Air Forces did the best they could with the equipment they had. It was pretty tough because all supplies dropped were limited by the size of bomb bay doors. After the Japanese surrendered, the AAF's Air Materiel Command began experimenting with new parachutes and planes, trying to develop a superior method of dropping all kinds of equipment from the sky. And it wasn't long before they came up with something far better than the wartime method. In fact, not too long ago, the Air Materiel boys conducted tests over Wright Field to see how their parachutes worked under realistic combat conditions. In those tests, a 75-millimeter howitzer cannon weighing over 2,000 pounds was dropped without any injury at all to the big gun. And just a few minutes after the cannon was dropped, it was hooked onto a jeep, ready to be hauled into firing position. You see, in this new method, two parachutes were used. One is a small ribbon chute, which pulls the cargo through rear doors built into a giant transport plane. The other parachute is much larger than the first. It's inflated in midair and swings the cargo safely to the ground. To help the small chute drag the cargo out of the doors, a wooden skid on ball-bearing wheels is put under it. More later, gang, so don't forget to listen. And now to our story. Entering the mysterious and forbidding temple of Kumikan, despite many weird occurrences, Pop, Tank, and young Christopher Cross found the tomb where they were to photograph a mural containing a vital secret of flight. But at the last minute, they discovered the film had been left behind, so Tank and Chris went outside to get it. When they came back, they missed the turnoff in the twisting tunnels and for a few nerve-wracking moments thought they were hopelessly lost, especially when Chris dropped the only flashlight and it broke. Pop, worried about their delay, went in search of them and found them. But suddenly, as they felt their way along the rough stone walls of the passageway, they heard a strange rumbling noise echoing through the darkness from a point not too far ahead of them.
Run! Come on, run!
Drop with jetties. What happened?
I don't know.
Feels like the tunnel's caving in.
Oh, I don't think it's that. It may be...
What happened?
I ran into a wall.
But there isn't any wall there.
But, great Scott, the passage is blocked.
What?
This stone slab runs from wall to wall. That's what we heard when it fell into place.
Come on, back the other way, fast.
Right.
Listen.
What?
Uh-oh. The same thing.
Wait.
We're trapped. Trapped. Oh, my gosh.
But I don't understand. What could have happened? How could those stones fall like that?
They didn't fall, Chris. Someone or something lowered them.
We got to get out of here. We got to get out of here. Come on, help me. Maybe we can bust it down.
No, it's solid stone, Tank.
We ain't gonna stay here and just die, are we? We gotta do something.
All right, but take it easy. Don't blow your top.
Hop, what can we do?
Well, first thing, we better find out if we really are trapped.
Of course we are. With them stones in the way, we
can't... Tank, control yourself.
But, Tank! I'm sorry. Just the dark and everything that's been happening. What should I do?
That's better. Now... You and Chris go back down the tunnel. Feel your way along. Chris, you take the right side over here. Tank the left.
Then what?
Search for an opening. Any kind of an opening. All loose stones where there might be a chance of digging our way out.
Digging? With what?
You have your screwdriver, don't you?
Yeah, but what good will a screwdriver be?
It's better than nothing. Oh, yes, and see if you can find the flashlight. Maybe we can repair it.
All right.
When you reach the other slab blocking the tunnel, sing out.
What are you going to do?
Check this end thoroughly. There must be some kind of mechanism in the wall for lowering and raising the stone. Get going now.
Come on, Tank.
Okay.
And remember, take it slow and easy. Cover every possible inch and don't get panicky. There's a way out of here. There must be a way out. And we'll find it. if we don't lose our heads.
But even as Hop tries to encourage Tank and Chris, he fights a rising terror within him. Trapped in the heart of the temple, with no possible aid from the outside, what can they do? Nevertheless, Hop tackles the stone slab before him. With sensitive fingers, he examines every inch, checks and double-checks the edges to find a crack, an indentation. In a heartbreakingly few minutes, he hears Tank sing out from the other end.
Hop!
Yes?
We reached the end.
Huh? About how far is it?
We didn't go more than 50 feet.
Oh, find any kind of an opening?
The wall's solid on my side.
Mine too.
There's no way to get through the slab down here. It's snug and tight against the walls.
Well, come on back then.
Hop?
Yes, Chris?
I can't find the flash. I must have dropped it farther back in the tunnel.
Oh, well, it doesn't matter, I suppose.
You find anything, Hop?
No breaks in the stone. So we'll make our own break.
What, with a screwdriver?
No, we'll work on the sides here. The slab fits into a channel. I figured that out, at least. Now, if we can get into it, we may find the device that lifts the stone.
You really think so, Hop?
Sure I do, Chris. It'll take a little time, of course, but I think we can get through all right.
Okay, here's the screwdriver.
We'll work in shifts, a half hour apiece. Just keep chopping away at the edge of the wall here.
Where?
Give me a hand. There. See where the rough stone meets the smooth slab?
Uh-huh.
That's our target.
Oh, murder. Okay, move over. Let me at it.
Right.
What do you want me to do, Hop?
Nothing, Chris. Find a comfortable place on the floor if you can and rest.
Isn't there anything?
Nothing.
The light sound of metal chipping against stone and Tank's labored breathing fills the tunnel. Pop and Chris settle down on the floor, their backs to the wall, and sit quietly, each concerned with his own thoughts. The minutes pass slowly, and unconsciously, the two boys begin to concentrate on the sound of Tank's work. They count each stroke, listening for the rattling fall of each loose piece of rock. After a half hour or so, Hop takes over and, feeling the broken surface, realizes that with all Tank's strength, the results of his labors are pitifully small. Furiously, he begins to dig into the hard surface. Time ceases to have meaning. The boys measure each shift by the ever-growing strain on their arms. The air in the tunnel grows heavy and foul, making each movement a tremendous effort.
Hop.
Yes, Chris.
It's so hot down here. I can hardly breathe.
Yeah, lie flat on the floor. The air will be fresher on the floor.
If we only had some water.
Try not to think about it, Chris.
I can't help it. I close my eyes. All I can see is water all around. There used to be a little brook in the back of our house. It had the coldest and the sweetest water in it. I can almost taste it.
Pete, take care, will you?
Oh, I'm sorry, Tank. I didn't mean to.
Oh, forget it. My fault. Here, Hop, my arm's dropping off. You better take over again, will you?
Oh, sure.
Tank.
Yeah, Chris.
Is it working? Are we going to get out?
A million years, maybe.
But Hop said we would.
Now, with only a screwdriver, what do you expect, miracles?
Easy, Tank.
I didn't mean that, Chris. We'll get out all right.
Sure. Tank's only kidding. Why, we've chopped away a lot already. I can feel the edge of the slab now. There's a space behind it, too. A little more work and... Oh, Lord.
What was that, Hop?
What happened?
The screwdriver. It broke.
There's momentary silence in the blackness of the tunnel. A silence broken only by the thudding beat of their hearts. As the full import of Hop's words hits them. Now their last hope is shattered. We'll bring you the climax of today's episode in just a moment, gang, so stand by. At the beginning of Hop Harrigan, gang, I started telling you about a brand new method of dropping supplies from the sky. Under real combat conditions, a thing like that could come in mighty handy, helping ground soldiers when they're surrounded or when their supply lines are cut off. As I said before, during the last war, any supplies that could be dropped were limited to the size of the bomb bay doors, as only bombers could be used. And even in the larger bombers, the doors weren't very big. Nothing larger than food containers, small arms, and ammunition could be dropped. Now, with the new way of dropping cargo, monster transport ships are used. The rear doors are giant-sized. You can imagine how large they are when you remember that a 2,000-pound cannon can easily be dropped from them. The C-82s used for these operations are so roomy that Wright Field engineers are thinking of dropping a Jeep along with the gun. Both would leave the plane within 3 seconds and land on the ground within 100 yards of each other. Well, that would really be a great help, parachuting down a Jeep along with a field gun, wouldn't it? Another big advantage in this new method is the amazing accuracy with which cargo can be dropped. The smaller ribbon chute makes the falling supplies go almost straight down. Both parachutes used in the operation were designed by the Air Force's laboratory at Wright Field. It's part of the new streamlined program of cooperation between the flyboys and the ground forces. It helps make the GI's equipment more mobile than ever before in history. Troops in the field can advance as fast as they can travel without having to worry about food or ammunition or even big artillery pieces. Gang, some of you may be our future pilots, navigators, and ground crews, so remember, America needs flyers. And now, back to our story. Now all hope of escape is gone. Hop, Tank, and Chris are sitting quietly in the tunnel, their minds whirling, but unable to put their thoughts into words. Suddenly, Tank jumps up and dashes at the stone slab, clawing it furiously.
We ain't gonna stay down here. I ain't gonna die in a rat hole like this. I ain't.
Tank, stop it.
I'll get out if I have to rip it apart with my bare hands.
Control yourself, Tank.
Let go of me. Let go of me.
You fool, you'll tear your hands to ribbons.
So what? Look at my hands now. I can do it. I'll rip it out myself.
Tank.
Let go of me. I said I'm gonna...
Sorry, Tank. I have to do it. Come on now.
Is he all right, Hop?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'm okay. Excuse me, Hop.
Forget it. Take it easy.
Yeah. Take it easy, he says.
Hop, I'm scared.
So am I, Chris. Awfully scared.
But you said we'd get out. You said there was a way.
I know it.
Well?
There is no way.
Hop's hushed words echo in the tunnel, and Chris, with a muffled sob, turns his face to the wall. It looks like the end of the trail for the boys. But there's a startling surprise ahead, so don't miss our next action-packed episode. Tune in and fly with Hop Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves. So long, Hop. We'll be seeing you same time, same neutral station. Hop Harrigan is a transcribed, copyrighted feature appearing in All American Comics magazine and is brought to you Monday through Friday, same time, same neutral station.